And today is Friday, June 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Donald Trump and other members of the Group of 20 met in Osaka, Japan.
We have many things to discuss, including trade and including some disarmament.
Also, we take a look at the second night of debates for the Democratic presidential candidates and how cancer treatments are being more precise and less invasive. Those stories and more are ahead on today's International Edition. In Osaka, Japan, the Group of 20 featuring the world leaders, finance ministers, and foreign ministers have wrapped up a day of meetings. VOA's White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman is traveling with U.S. President Donald Trump and is in Osaka for the summit. I spoke with Steve and began our conversation by asking him about the bilateral meeting President Trump had with Russian President Vladimir Putin, where the topic of Russian meddling in U.S. elections was broached.
Yes, it came up, Steve, in a very unusual way. A reporter at the end of introductory remarks that both Trump and Putin made to the pool that was in the room, including myself, one of our colleagues asked him if he would tell Putin not to meddle in next year's presidential election in the United States. And the president replied, "Yes, I will." And then he turned to Putin and said, "Don't meddle in the election, President," and then repeated, "Don't meddle in the election," sort of smiling and wagging a finger at Putin, who also seemed to enjoy the exchange. And this, of course, led to an immediate interpretation by those in the room and also people around the world, who then quickly viewed this on television, that the president seemed quite light-hearted about this admonition of Vladimir Putin.
All eyes are pretty much on the bilateral meeting that is scheduled to take place between the president and Chinese President Xi Jinping tomorrow. Has there been any indication as to whether or not the two will be able to hammer out the trade differences that they have?
Well, I asked President Trump about that today, whether he is expecting to see President Xi put a trade deal on the table when they meet on Saturday. And the president said he really wasn't expecting that, but if there's something, we might know about it even before he does. Of course, there have been indications in the Chinese press that President Xi is going to show up with something. And he was also asked if he had made a decision not to impose additional tariffs on China. The president has talked about tariffs of 25%, or if he eases off of that, perhaps only 10%. And the president was adamant that he had, in fact, he answered in one word, no, that he had not made a decision not to impose further tariffs. So that is going to be a very closely watched meeting and probably will end up being, for the United States at least, the most pivotal bilateral meeting to occur at this G20.
As the G20 comes to a close tomorrow, has there been any discussion or any information given as to the possibility as to whether, if, or what a joint communique will contain?
Yeah, there's always a big guessing game about at these sort of meetings, whether there's going to be a communique and what's going to be in it. Of course, when you have 20-plus countries and international organizations such as the WTO also involved in getting language that satisfies everybody, most of the time you have what is quite a watered-down document. So I don't think anybody here in Osaka is holding their breath expecting that the communique is going to lead to some significant breakthrough.
One last question. The G20 wraps up tomorrow, and then the president is on his way to Seoul, South Korea, for a meeting with President Moon Jae-in there. Can you give us a quick preview as what we can expect?
Well, he will be meeting with President Moon. That much is known. There's a lot of speculation that the president will go up to the demilitarized zone dividing North and South Korea. He tried to do that on a previous trip, and there were weather issues with the helicopters getting up there. So I don't think anybody's going to be surprised if there's another attempt to get President Trump up to the DMZ. But there are also rumors, we should say, that, perhaps there's going to be a third meeting between President Trump and Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea. But we've been talking to a lot of senior U.S. officials about that, and every single one of them have very firmly knocked that down as a possibility.
Steve Herman is VOA's White House bureau chief. He's traveling with the president currently in Osaka, Japan. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure, Steve.
Forces allied to Libya's internationally recognized government seized the town of Gharyan in Libya, south of Tripoli, Thursday. VOA Middle East correspondent and Istanbul bureau chief Heather Murdoch is on the phone with the latest. Heather, are you there?
Yes, thank you.
Heather, you were recently in Gharyan earlier today. What exactly did you see?
Yes, we were in Gharyan earlier today and also another town that was recently taken by the Western forces. In Gharyan, we saw a little bit of recovery. The battle more or less ended on Thursday morning, but there were still mortars overnight last night, including civilian deaths and injuries. We saw a little bit of the town coming to life. Some businesses open, but mostly it appeared that businesses were shut and military folks were on the streets.
Now, from what I recall, you also were moving towards another area where fighting was continuing today.
Yes, there is still fighting in a small part of a place called Sabea, which is another critical part of this fight, but a lot of it around 1 o'clock this afternoon was completely taken over by Western forces. That is the army of Tripoli, which is the internationally backed army, which is currently fighting with the Eastern army, which is led by the Khalifa Haftar, who is the de facto leader of the East.
Now, fighting for the region around Tripoli began back in April. Has there been any kind of movement towards some kind of ceasefire or some kind of situation that would alleviate the fighting and spare those who are living in the area from the turmoil?
Yes, this turmoil is very real. Roughly 650 people have died, 94,000 have been displaced. And for the most part, this battle has remained a stalemate. Occasionally, there's some strong movement one way or another, although the forces in Tripoli say that they believe this week might have been a turning point. This was a very strategic movement taking these towns because they have more or less, as they say, cut off the supplies of Haftar's army. So they're hoping that this will be a large change. Other people have said that they worry about a retaliation. So this could be a pivotal point in it. But up till now, it has been a long, slow battle that has had the greatest toll on the local civilians.
Heather Murdoch is VOA's Middle East correspondent and Istanbul bureau chief. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden was among 10 Democratic presidential contenders on stage for part two of the Democratic Party's first presidential debate. That happened on Thursday evening. The Democratic candidates were often critical of U.S. President Donald Trump, but did not hesitate to turn on one another. This as we hear from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone.
On the debate stage in Miami, Florida, Thursday, 10 more Democratic presidential contenders took part in a televised debate hosted by NBC following the first 10 who debated on Wednesday. Former Vice President Joe Biden, the current frontrunner in the large Democratic field, left little doubt about why he is running for president.
I'm running to lead this country because I think it's important we restore the soul of this nation. This president has ripped it out. It's the only president in our history who has equated racist and white supremacist with ordinary and decent people.
Biden stood next to Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, currently running second in the polls. Sanders argued that the country's problems are much deeper than merely defeating President Trump.
Nothing will change unless we have the guts to take on Wall Street, the insurance industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the military-industrial complex, and the fossil fuel industry.
At times during the two-hour debate, Biden found himself on the defensive. California Senator Kamala Harris challenged Biden's defense of his past efforts to find common ground with segregationist senators and his past opposition to forced school busing to integrate schools.
It was hurtful to hear you talk about the reputations of two United States senators who built their reputations and career on the segregation of race in this country.
Biden responded with a spirited defense of his record on civil rights and his tenure as vice president under the first African-American president, Barack Obama.
I ran because of civil rights. I continue to think we have to make fundamental changes in civil rights. And those civil rights, by the way, include not just only African-Americans, but the LGBT community.
Biden and Sanders are both in their 70s, and the generational divide within the Democratic Party was on full display when California Representative Eric Swalwell challenged Biden directly.
I was 6 years old when a presidential candidate came to the California Democratic Convention and said, it's time to pass the torch to a new generation of Americans. That candidate was then Senator Joe Biden. Joe Biden was right when he said it was time to pass the torch to a new generation of Americans 32 years ago. He's still right today.
Another younger Democrat who has climbed in the polls in recent months from relative obscurity is the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, Pete Buttigieg. Like many on stage, Buttigieg slammed the Trump administration's approach to immigration.
But we should call out hypocrisy when we see it. And for a party that associates itself with Christianity, to say that it is okay to suggest that God would smile on the division of families at the hands of federal agents, that God would condone putting children in cages, has lost all claim to ever use religious language again.
Also taking part in Thursday's debate were Colorado Senator Michael Bennett, former Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper, New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, author Marianne Williamson, and businessman Andrew Yang. Democrats will hold their next debates in late July. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Kayleigh McEnany, the National Press Secretary for U.S. President Donald Trump's re-election campaign, released this statement following the debate. Quote, "The cast of characters may have changed, but the second night's script was eerily like the first, a two-hour-long infomercial for President Donald J. Trump's re-election campaign. All the Democrats tripped over each other in a race to see who could stand out as the most leftist candidate, threatening government control over every aspect of people's lives. We are many months away from seeing who the Democrat nominee will be, but one thing is clear, President Trump will be the hands-on victor after each and every Democrat debate," end quote. Here are some other major stories from around the globe. U.S. House Democrats dropped opposition Thursday to a bill passed by the Republican-controlled Senate that would release $4.6 billion in emergency funds to address worsening humanitarian conditions on the U.S.-Mexico border. Palestinian officials attending a two-day conference on the status of Jerusalem warn peace with Israel will not be possible without resolving the dispute over the ancient city, which both sides claim as their capital. Argentine authorities have seized about 1,000 guns and hundreds of explosives from an international criminal gang, calling it the largest seizure of its kind in the country's history. You will find expanded coverage of these stories and more at the VOAnews.com website and with our mobile application. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute. For the first time ever, astronomers detected and then pinpointed the origination of a single fast radio burst, or FRB. A fast radio burst is just that, a very powerful and quick, lasting only a couple of milliseconds, blast of radio waves that are transmitted from far across the universe. Astronomers at the Australian Square Kilometre Array Pathfinder Radio Telescope in Western Australia detected the radio burst, known as FRB 18924, in September 2018. They determined that it originated in a Milky Way-sized galaxy located within the Gru constellation, about 3.6 billion light-years away. To learn more about the galactic source of the FRB, the astronomers used the European South Observatory's 8-meter Very Large Telescope, the 10-meter Keck Telescope, and the 8-meter Gemini South Telescope to image and measure distance. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Last-ditch efforts to persuade Tehran not to exceed nuclear limits within days were on course for failure today, as Iranian officials said their demands had not been met and Washington rebuffed European calls to ease sanctions to allow negotiations. A week after Washington called off planned airstrikes, diplomats say Iran is on course within days to exceed the threshold of enriched uranium allowed under its nuclear deal with world powers, which Washington withdrew from last year. Any such move would reshape the diplomatic landscape at a time when European officials are warning that a small mistake on either side could push the United States and Iran to war. Iranian officials who met in Vienna with representatives of the countries that are still party to the nuclear deal, Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China. The Iranians repeated their demand that they be allowed to sell oil. Despite abandoning the deal, Washington has demanded European countries force Iran to continue complying with it. Iran says it cannot do so unless the Europeans provide it with some way to receive the deal's promised economic benefits. Much of Europe is getting hit with a record-setting heat wave. The World Meteorological Organization is concerned not just because of the temperatures, but because the summer heat is a month earlier than usual and more intense. It's also likely another sign of climate change. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WMO headquarters in Geneva.
Europe is wilting from the warm air masses coming from Africa, bringing with them Saharan heat and, in some cases, Saharan dust. The World Meteorological Organization says temperature records have been broken this week in France, Spain, Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. On Friday, France issued red alerts for four areas in the south as temperatures reached an all-time high of 45.1 Celsius. While the spate of new maximum daytime records is of concern, WMO spokeswoman Claire Nullis says the increasing number of minimum overnight temperature records is particularly worrisome.
I stress the overnight records are important because in nighttime it's when our bodies recover, it's when plants, it's when animals recover. So if we're seeing minimum overnight temperatures of 25 degrees C, as we have done in some places, it's not good news.
Heat events kill thousands of people every year. They often trigger secondary events such as wildfires and electrical grid failures. The WMO says the number of people exposed worldwide to heat waves rose by an estimated 126 million between 2000 and 2016. The World Health Organization warns high temperatures affect the health of many people. It says heat can trigger exhaustion or heat stroke and can worsen existing conditions such as cardiovascular, respiratory, and kidney diseases. Nullis says this heat wave was predicted, so nations were able to plan for it and head off the worst. She says early health warnings and measures to help people in distress have prevented the huge numbers of deaths seen in previous years. She says it is premature to attribute the unusually early heat waves in Europe to climate change.
But it is absolutely consistent with what we expect from climate change. Heat waves will become more intense, they'll become more drawn out, they'll become more extreme, they'll start earlier and they will finish later.
The WMO reports the Earth is set to experience the five warmest years on record from 2015 to 2019 inclusive. It says the warming of the planet will increase greenhouse gas concentrations, fueling global warming. That, it says, will cause ice melt, glacier retreat, sea level rise, ocean heat, and extreme weather for generations to come. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And you're listening to VOA's International Edition.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, how long can a head of state maintain effective leadership? Some African leaders are forced out of office, while others respect the political process. The politics of transition on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This is Steve Miller, and you're listening to VOA's International Edition. Cancer treatments are becoming more precise and less invasive. This means treating some cancers will take less time and produce better results, as we hear in this report from VOA's Carol Pearson.
Chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery are standard treatments to combat cancer. But chemo and radiation kill healthy cells as well as malignant ones, and the side effects are legendary. Cancer treatment is now moving towards precision medicine, therapies that target just the cancer and not other tissue. For example, focused radiation for women with early stage breast cancer can be used after surgery that removes just the malignant tumor. Plus, it takes less time than full breast radiation.
The short 5-day treatment is just as good as the whole breast radiation for 4 to 6 weeks.
Other treatments use the body's own immune system.
It's not pretty clear that immune system sees cancer cells, sees them as abnormal, and if we unleash the power of the immune system, can attack and destroy the cancer cells in a very, very helpful way.
Still another treatment involves testing the cancer cells to determine their genetic makeup and then using medicine designed to kill only those cells.
We're talking about targeting cells at the very core of what made them a cancer to begin with. And that's what precision medicine is really about.
Each patient's cancer is unique, just like their DNA. And that's what helps determine what medicine will work best. Healthy cells are left alone, and patients' side effects can be remedied.
Very few of them have had a side effect that I've even needed to do anything about. And the couple that I've had, if I just drop the dose one level, not only is the side effect gone, but the treatment still remains effective. Right now, where I think the biggest impact is being felt is for those patients whose cancer is not cured, that comes back over and over again, or actually spreads to other parts of the body.
The results are very promising.
I get this patient in who's been told they're only going to be around for 3 months, and they've got a cancer that typically is not treatable. Even with chemotherapy, they don't do well. I give him this pill, and that was 4 years ago, and he has no evidence of disease. And I meet another woman who has sarcoma who's had so much, she was so sick, she was in a wheelchair and on oxygen. And in my lifetime, that person would be gone in a year. And here it is 3 years later, and she's hiking with her kids.
These therapies are still new, but cancer specialists say targeted therapy, whether focused radiation, immunotherapy, or the genomic testing followed by precision medicine, is the future of cancer treatment. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
And before I go today, it was on this date back in 1914 that Archduke Franz Ferdinand of Austria and his wife Sophie were shot to death in Sarajevo by Serb nationalist Gavrilo Princip, which sparked World War I. And then on 1919, at the Treaty of Versailles, the war ended. And that's going to do it for me today. On behalf of our director, Nadia Taha, and engineer, Nick Ivanov, thank you so much for joining us. Now for pictures, videos, stories, and more, be sure to follow VOA on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, with our VOA mobile app, you can download our stories and take them with you. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Make sure you have a fantastic Friday and an amazing weekend.